Welcome to Confessing the Faith, a podcast devoted to discussions concerning Christian doctrine and the Christian life. My name is Joe Anity. I serve as pastor at Emmaus Reformed Baptist Church in Hemet, California. And yes, we are now Emmaus Reformed Baptist Church and not Emmaus Christian Fellowship. I guess I'll have to take some time in another episode to explain why that is. But I'm joined today by Pastor Steve Marcadont, who serves as pastor of Sovereign Grace Baptist Church in Ontario, California. Steve, thank you so much for taking the time to speak with me today.
Oh, glad to do so, Joe. Thank you.
Yeah. I'm looking forward to this episode, Steve. The title of it is The History of SCARBC, which stands for the Southern California Association of Reformed Baptist Churches. And that is what Steve has agreed to provide us with today, a history of SCARBC, of which both of our churches are a part. Steve, I was wondering, before we get to the association and the history of it, I wonder if you'd be willing to tell us a bit about your own history, your own history personally, and also the history of Sovereign Grace Baptist Church. Perhaps you could begin by just telling us a bit about your family, Steve.
Yeah, well, I've actually have five children, but my firstborn died after 52 days in the hospital, and that was probably 36 years ago. But by God's grace, I've got four children. Three of them are married. All of them are converted, and the married ones, all of their spouses are converted. And in fact, at the moment, all of the seven are members of the church here at Sovereign Grace. So that's a great blessing. However, my oldest son is moving to Tucson, Lord willing. Got hired on by the police department there, and he's in academy right now. So if that all works out, by God's grace, they'll be moving to Tucson and going to Tucson Reformed Baptist Church.
Oh, wow. That'll be quite a change for them, and what a blessing it is to have your children and in-laws in the church, your children-in-law in the church. What about your wife, Steve? Tell us about her.
Oh, Becky is a dear, dear girl. We actually met in Hawaii. Well, I knew her before, but we met on a missions trip in Hawaii. There were about 60 of us that went over there to do vacation Bible schools. Mm-hmm. And I'm about 2 years older than she is, and I was leading one of the studies and got a chance to get to know Becky better. To me, she was just a little kid, but over in Hawaii, I started looking at her a little differently, you know, and she always looked young for her age. And so my roommate there in Hawaii told me, you can't go out with her. She's just a little kid. So I was scared. I didn't know how old she was. So I asked her. She said, I'm 16. Then I was happy. And it was okay. Because I was 18, you know.
Sure.
So we were boyfriend and girlfriend from that time. It was before anybody heard about courting. We've been married 41 years. It'll be 42 this year. We've been married 41 years. Dear woman of God, I love her very much, and I couldn't be a pastor without her, to tell you the truth. She is a tremendous help.
I see Becky at some of the quarterly gatherings, and it seems to me every time I see her, she has a little baby in her arms.
She does. She's a child magnet is what she is, and children just love her. And amazingly enough, I've been in the church here since 1977, and of course we were married, and so we got married in 76, came to the church here in 77. She took over the 2 and 3 year old class, and she has been the only teacher of that class and is still the teacher of that class.
Oh, wow.
So there's a lot of adults in our church, a few adults that went through that 2 and 3 year old class, and then they put their own kids through that 2 and 3 year old class. And we're waiting for some grandkids to go to that class.
Oh, wow. That is really precious.
Yeah.
Steve, how did you come to faith in Christ?
Well, I was raised in a Christian home, but my testimony was kind of stark. I was in a fundamentalist church, and I would hear the preaching every week. And just as a second grader, I was quite cognizant of things. And I had a couple of friends at school that we used to like to tell off-color jokes and speak inappropriately and whispers and giggle and think that was really funny. And I knew if I was a Christian, I couldn't do that. And so I, in my mind, purposed, okay, I'll wait till summer comes. I won't see my friends. I can be saved at that time. And then then there won't be a problem. Well, that's what a little second grader thought. But actually, I was lying in bed one night and just became terrified, terrified of hell, terrified with no audible voice or anything like that, but just the thought, you know, if you don't come to Christ now, what makes you think you'll ever come to Christ? And I ran downstairs, talked to my mom. She did the best she could to help me. She was a new Christian herself. So, you know, from that time on, the Lord did save me. And I was able to go to my friends the next day at school and tell them, look, I don't talk that way anymore. I don't want to. And they said, oh, fine. No problem. And we remained friends. So.
So all of that as a second grader, huh?
As a second grader, yeah. It was a very stark experience. Wow. That I still remember, to tell you the truth. I can remember it like it was yesterday. You know? So it was a great conversion experience that the Lord gave me. Not everybody gets an experience, and we're not saved by experience. We're saved by Christ. And everybody's testimony may be a little bit different, but everybody's testimony is always going to be the same, that they looked to Jesus Christ and sought him in faith and repented of their sins.
Amen. And how was it that you were called to the ministry?
Well, in the church I was in that I was talking about, everybody had to go to Bible college. That was just it. If you didn't go to Bible college, you were, you know, second class or whatever. You know, and I don't think they meant it that way, but that's just the way the pressure was. And I refused for a year. I wanted to be a computer programmer. In high school, you know, they used to give aptitude tests. I don't think they do that anymore. But they did aptitude tests to find out what we were good at. And I remember talking to my counselor, and when I chose computer programming, he said, that's perfect for you. That's what you need. He said, whatever you do, don't deal with people. That's going to be very bad for you. You know? And I believed him. And I was very shy. Still I'm shy. But I was very shy and avoided every speech class in high school. But after a year of computer programming, I decided, okay, I'll go to Bible college for 1 year. I'll go to Bible college 1 year, then I'll finish up at the University of Arizona, computer programming. And that's what I'll do for a living. Well, I was at college, Pacific Coast Baptist Bible College, which is now Heartland College in Oklahoma City. At the time, it was in San Dimas here. And as I, you know, just considered the claims of God on my life, I said, well, I'm open to being a pastor, if that's what the Lord would have for me. Mm-hmm. And such. So at any rate, it was kind of a gradual thing. And the way that it actually happened was doors opened for me to be able to be in the ministry.
Right.
So I was asked by my home pastor, as I was graduating for my fourth year with my bachelor's, he asked me to come back and be his associate pastor, which I was very excited about. Large church, about 800 people or so. And this just seemed like a really good opportunity. That was my home church anyway, the church that I knew. Well, I'm getting ahead of myself a little bit, but I'll just talk about how I got here at Sovereign Grace.
Sure, yeah.
There was a friend of mine, Ron Martina, who had taken over this particular church. And he was now the pastor, first-year pastor. He's 10 years older than me. He was a single man. And he asked me if I would come and set up a Sunday school for him. And he sold it by saying, it's going to be a really good experience for you. When you do that, you'll have some ministry experience behind you. And so I was willing to do that. The one problem was he was a Calvinist, and I was not. I actually argued against Calvinism. We had a few Calvinists in the school. I didn't like them. I didn't talk to them. In fact, Ron and I didn't have a falling out, but Ron and I really didn't talk to each other anymore after being pretty close our first year, because he was a Calvinist and he was hung with the Calvinists. I didn't like those guys, you know. But long story short, he asked me to come, and I said, well, you know, and then he said to me, he says, you know, I'm a Calvinist, right? I said, yeah, I don't really care about that anymore. And he said, okay, good. And that just shows, you know, in 1977, we just didn't understand. and didn't have all of the understanding that the Lord's been pleased to give us since then.
Sure.
So how, I went there.
Go ahead.
I'm sorry. Oh, go ahead and ask. Yeah.
Well, I was going to say, when did Sovereign Grace begin then as a church? You came around in 1977. It had existed prior to that, though.
Oh, yes, yes. Yeah, the church here actually was started as a Baptist Bible Fellowship church, a missions plant that they set up. The fellow that started the church, I actually know him. He's with the Lord now. But I had a chance to get to know him pretty well. He was a builder by trade. He bought the land out here, and he built our house that we live in. He built the first church building, and then he built the second and third church buildings. And so he did a great job, but he left in about 1974.
Okay.
And the church went through a lot of changes. A lot of things were happening. And we were up at a different church, Ron and I. It's a little confusing, but we had a little church of about 30 that I went to. This church had about 80. And their pastor decided to leave and asked Ron if we could merge the two churches together.
Mm-hmm.
So we didn't have a building, and they did. So we came down here to Ontario. We were in Rancho Cucamonga.
Oh, I see. Yeah.
We came down here to Ontario, and from that time on, that's where we've been.
Wonderful.
You know? Yeah.
Well, how did it work out then with you teaching at the school there at the church, being a non-Calvinist and even an anti-Calvinist, and yet the pastor being a Calvinist? How did that go?
That is an interesting story that I love to tell, because Ron and I did quite well for a long time because he was a friend and he was a good preacher, and he still is a good preacher. He's in Omaha, Nebraska now, excellent preacher. And what happened was Al Martin came to Long Beach, and Ron had a chance to go hear Al Martin in Long Beach, and all of a sudden he came back very different. Mm-hmm. Al Martin is an old-time Reformed Baptist preacher from New Jersey. Ron came back very different. His preaching changed. His methodology changed. And I didn't like it. I didn't like it at all. And it was just all the things that I was afraid was going to happen. Because Ron was a Calvinist, but he didn't know how to practice like a Calvinist.
Mm-hmm.
And so when he met Al Martin and then some other people, everything changed. So one Wednesday night after prayer meeting, Ron and I were in his office with a third man that was just there, and we got into it. We started fighting, you know. Becky was sick that night, so she didn't come. Ron, very demonstrative Italian fellow, always working with his hands, always writing things down, and he's on his chalkboard writing as fast as he can and arguing, and I'm using all my anti-Calvinist arguments, and the other guy who was a church member was just standing there with his mouth open, just not sure what to do. And I was fighting against Ron, and we stayed till midnight arguing. And I left upset, and Ron was upset, and I knew I was going to have to resign from the church. I got home, and Becky was asleep. I didn't wake her up because she loved the church. I didn't want to tell her what happened. But I didn't feel like we really had a choice. So I just went to bed, and then I woke up in the morning. And my first conscious thought was, Steve, why are you fighting against the truth? And my mind instantly switched. All the arguments that I used against the doctrines of grace now became precious to me. And I instantly saw the truth of the doctrines of grace and the beauty of it. Called Ron up on the phone, and of course he expected me to resign. And I told him, I see it. I believe in the doctrines of grace. I'm a 5-point Calvinist. And Ron goes, whoa, we'll study this together because I think limited atonement's true too, but I really can't defend it yet. So from that time on, we did study together and grew together and learned together and did so all the way to 1989.
Okay.
What
year was it that you came to believe in the doctrines of grace, Steve? Do you remember?
Yeah, it was 1978.
78, okay.
It was about 4 months before I was going back to Tucson, and I had to call my pastor, who I still love back there, and he's, believe it or not, he's still pastoring. that same church.
The fundamentalist church that you were referring to?
Yeah, fundamentalist church, yeah. Yeah, he's still pastoring that same church. And I had to call him and tell him I'm not going to be coming back. And he wasn't happy.
Yeah.
He was pretty unhappy about that. But we patched it up over the years. I preached in that church before since then.
Huh.
And, you know, we've gone out to eat a few times, and he'll tell me, I'm a four-point Calvinist. That's what he'll say. I'm a four-point Calvinist, Steve.
Mm-hmm.
And, yeah, okay. And you can say cruel things about that if you want. Say, well, then you're not a Calvinist at all if you want to, but I wouldn't do that. So
sure,
I respect him greatly. He's a great man, and was very helpful to me.
Well, how have things been at Sovereign Grace over the years, since the time you just described to us? How have things gone with the church? I know that is such a broad and general question. You could go just about anywhere with that, Steve, but I guess my hope is that you can maybe provide us with a little bit of a sense of your church where you pastor.
Yeah. Well, I mean, God's grace has really been good, but it hasn't always been easy. In those early days, we were very probably stage cage Calvinists that people talk about, and probably drove people away. We had a church of about 120 by the time the reform was finished, and we took the name Sovereign Grace Baptist Church.
Mm-hmm.
In 1982, we were down to about 40 people.
Mm-hmm.
So from 120 to 40, with people leaving one at a time, well, usually one family at a time, then grab another family and take them with them, is the way that it went down. And it was really hard. So throughout the 80s, it was difficult here. Ron was the main preaching pastor. I was a co-elder and preached and also and taught at times. And so he was the main preaching pastor. He resigned in 89, which caused another crisis for the church. It had been a very tumultuous decade, and he resigned, and I became the preaching pastor at that time, and we were down to about 35 people at that point, you know. But, you know, God's been merciful to them. I mean, I'm talking about attendance. I'm not talking about members.
Right.
I'm talking about 35 people that were attending. And from that time on, it's been a slow, steady progress. We'll probably have 140, 150 in church on a Sunday now. We have just shy of 100 members, and God's been very, very good to us, a very mature congregation, well settled in what they believe. God's brought new people in. There are a few people that have been here longer than I have, a handful now. You know, some I've had to preach their funerals that have been here longer than me. But like I think of Pat and Debbie Quick, they've been here longer than I have. And Pete and Pam Teofilo, same thing for them.
Mm-hmm.
And God has been really good to us here at Sovereign Grace. I think at this point, it's not that the devil doesn't attack. It's not that problems don't happen. But at this point, I would say we live in a time of peace. And for that, we can be very thankful.
That's wonderful. Well, I always enjoy being at Sovereign Grace. You host the quarterly once a year.
Yeah.
And your people are very sweet. And they're very good servants, and so I always enjoy being there, and I know our people do too who come out for that particular quarterly.
Sure.
I wonder, Steve, if you could then now transition to the topic of the Southern California Association of Reformed Baptist Churches and give us some sense about how that association came to be.
I'll be glad to do so. And, of course, your church is part of our local association, and you know, it's got an interesting history behind it. In about 1988, there was a pastor's fellowship, and you probably know some of these guys that were part of that because Earl Blackburn was out here in Southern California at that time, and so was Larry Vincent. And then there was myself, and then, like I said, Ron Martina. And we would fellowship together and get together once a month. And then we'd have other guys that we would reach out to, and some of them would come and some of them wouldn't come. Interestingly enough, we actually had Greg Bonson come to one of those meetings while he was in Southern California before he went to be with the Lord. And a very gracious man, by the way. You know, he doesn't have that reputation, but he is, you know, or was. At any rate, there was another Reformed Baptist church. They'll remain nameless. they were having all kinds of problems. They were the big one. They had a lot of people, but they were bleeding people quickly, and the people were leaving, and as they would leave, they'd be put under church discipline for leaving the church. Mm. And of course, here now you have godly people that their only crime was feeling like their church was too authoritarian. And I guess the church kind of proved it by disciplining them when they would leave. Hmm. Not every one of them would be disciplined, but that was a very common thing that would happen. And, of course, we take church discipline very seriously. So now what do we do with these people that wanted to come to our various churches? Of course, we accepted them and tried to talk to the other church, much to no avail, basically. And really, it was Earl Blackburn that was the impetus to this. He said, you know, we really need to do something to stop this type of authoritarianism that was happening, not just in Southern California, but it was actually happening around the country. Mm-hmm. There was a brand of authoritarianism that we felt was very unhealthy. But Earl, being a pretty good scholar, also knew that our confession of faith talks about what churches should do in this time's controversy. And so we began to talk about forming an association. I can mention what an association is if you'd like, Joe.
Yeah, I think that would be great, Steve.
Yeah, an association, it's really important. And it was a new concept to myself and Larry Vincent, and then later Larry Smith, who would take over for Larry Vincent. It was a new concept to us, because we were used to fellowships. And, of course, in a fellowship, really, it's a pastor's fellowship is what you have, and that's what we were doing, was a pastor's fellowship. We were aware of denominations. Mm-hmm. We had no use for denominations because, obviously, Christ died for the church and gave himself for the church, didn't die for the denomination and give himself for the denomination, although that's another story, too.
Sure.
But I won't go there. Okay. So anyway, it's the local church that we felt was very important. But we also didn't like conventions. A convention didn't seem like the route to go. And we found that in the early days, the Baptists had associations. Mm-hmm. The Philadelphia Association. There was the Red Creek Association. A lot of associations. We were focusing in on the history of some of our American associations. And as we did so, we said, this is what we need to do. Now, on the East Coast, they had tried to start an association. They called it Reformed Baptist Association. And so they attempted to start that. And Dave Dykstra was one of the key figures there, and some other men, too. Hmm. But it grew in numbers, but it never grew into be what they had hoped it would be. It actually became a pastor's fellowship.
Okay.
And and it didn't really meet the need of an association. And so we saw that happening, too, and said, okay, we want an association where our churches are absolutely independent, but we also have a dependency on one another. In other words, the main reason was to stamp out authoritarianism. We didn't want our people to be able to or to be oppressed and have an authoritarian spirit that would hinder them. And so there were only three of us, and then another man came along, Rick Kellen, who is no longer in the ministry. There were four of us that worked on a constitution, to put a constitution together so that we could have accountability one with another. But the one thing that was true was the local church did make the final decision. Mm-hmm. If they were going to discipline somebody or whatever it happened to be, the local church had the authority to do that. But the association had the authority to call that church to account, tell them they were wrong, and couldn't unchurch them, but could remove them from the association and accept these people into our churches. So that was the genesis of it, and it actually took until 1990 for us to form that association. And we were, again, learning and struggling and trying to find out about associationalism and what it really meant. and that would be a process that would continue. But there were four churches that started the association. During that first year, one of those churches went out of existence and folded. So there were only three. And then before we had our next year, our first year anniversary, Palmdale Reformed Baptist Church with Rich Barcellus joined, and there became four again. So that was the way it started. And we were the only association that was functioning that we know of in the United States that is Reformed Baptist. Of course, there are other associations, but we were the only Reformed Baptist association, and actually became the impetus to start a national association along with some of the other men that had been part of the Reformed Baptist Association back east. They saw that didn't work, but they saw what we were doing, that it did work. And so they got together and decided to form ARBCA.
Maybe you could say a word about that, Steve.
Uh-huh.
The relationship that exists between SCAR-BC and ARBCA, the Association of Reformed Baptist Churches of America. I know there is no real formal relationship, mm-hmm. but you've already alluded to the fact that there is some kind of informal relationship that exists between the two associations. Maybe you could speak to that a little bit more.
Oh, sure. I'd be glad to do so. I really believe a local association can meet some needs that a national association can't, mm-hmm. because a local association, everybody knows each other. In a place like Southern California, we actually live in close proximity with each other that our people can get to know each other. And that's a wonderful thing. That doesn't always happen. Some associations, local associations, are more widespread than that. But a national association can do some things that are very hard for a local association to do, too. A national association, just by the sheer manpower, is able to have a seminary, for instance, is able to support missionaries, and able to work together cooperatively that way. And so there's a great need for a national association, and ARBCA fits that need. And we have always said all along there's a great need for local associations. And Joe, they've sprung up all over the United States, I'm glad to say.
Yeah.
There are some folks like I think of my friend Doug Vandermeulen up in North Dakota, mm-hmm. who was trying to call me while we were talking. He would love to be part of an association. But it takes more than one church to be an association, doesn't it?
So yeah.
Working really hard. He's trying to plant another church in Valley City, mm-hmm. North Dakota. And then there's a good man over in Montana. They're talking about getting an association together. You know, you really kind of have to have three churches at least to have an association and make it work. You could do it with two, but three would be the minimum number I would expect that would be a functioning association. And then, of course, you can grow from there. The most important thing is to have a solid foundation. And that's what the 1689 London Baptist Confession is for us.
Right.
You know, we all say we believe the Bible. Everybody believes the Bible. Mormons believe the Bible. Jehovah's Witnesses believe the Bible. What do you believe the Scriptures teach? That's really what it amounts to. And the London Baptist Confession is our framework, our skeleton, that gives us that doctrinal unity, and then it binds us together, mm-hmm. with like-minded folk. So our churches, especially our local churches, can have very different flavors to them. They can have different personalities, just like people have different personalities. Yet there's the same doctrinal understanding. And that's why we appreciate our fellowship with you down at Emmaus, and a great addition to our local association. And Lord willing, be a great addition to the national association. They are not identical. We have local association churches that are not part of ARBCA. Mm-hmm. And, you know, that's just... And that's fine. You can that can be done. But as a general rule, you'd expect over time most of your local association churches, or maybe all of them, would also be part of the national association too, and work together cooperatively that way.
Right. Well, thank you.
I hope I answered your question there.
You did. That was very, very well put, Steve. I appreciate it. So the local association, SCAR-BC, started in 1990.
Right.
So that makes it almost 28 years old, I guess. I don't know about that.
That makes me feel old.
Yeah. and there are currently 9 churches in
right.
SCAR-BC. Let me put the question this way, Steve, and you can go with it where you want to go with it. When you look at the growth of SCAR-BC, do you consider it to be rapid or slow? What is your perception of the growth of the Southern California Association? Maybe you haven't even thought about that. I don't know.
No, I've thought about it, obviously. When you figure that we started with 4, and then we're down to 3, and now we're 9, and we have been 10. There have been churches that have gone out of existence that have been part of SCAR.
Mm-hmm.
There have been other churches that broke fellowship in a friendly way, but are no longer part of SCAR for various reasons. And I don't think we'll ever be huge.
Mm-hmm.
That's really not even the goal. I mean, obviously, we'd love to have Reformed Baptist Church in every city if we could. But I'm very encouraged because I look at the map of Southern California and go from San Diego all the way up to Palmdale.
Mm-hmm.
And there would only be a few small areas where somebody would be more than a half hour away from one of our SCAR-BC churches. That's kind of amazing. You know, here in Southern California with our freeways, we can drive. And, you know, even if you lived in San Diego, you can make it up to Vista, you know. And it depends on where in San Diego you lived. But, you know, nonetheless, a half-hour drive would put you at one of our churches. And then another thing a local association does, too, is it keeps us – we realize we're not in competition with one another.
Mm-hmm.
You know?
Yeah.
I mean, there's millions and millions of people here in Southern California. We don't need to be fighting over individuals. You know, we have people that that live right in our area, they drive to another church, and that's fine. We have other people that live, you know, further away, drive past other churches and come here. And that is a preference. That's just whatever God would have and what the people want to do. But it's important that our churches communicate with one another, that we're not in competition with one another, and that we, you know, speak well of one another, give our conscientious commendation, even share pulpits from time to time as the Lord allows, and those sorts of things. And, of course, quarterly gatherings are a wonderful way for our people to get to know each other.
Sure, yeah.
And bring in good preachers or even use our own preachers who are good preachers.
Mm-hmm.
And it works, you know.
Yeah. My prayer is that we would have the opportunity to plant more churches here in Southern California. There are so many people.
Mm-hmm.
Certainly, we could really never have enough churches, you know, even if the Lord were really to bless us with the ability to plant very many of them. But it's a difficult task, I think, especially given the requirement mm-hmm. that churches fully subscribe to the Second London Confession. I mean, so
mm-hmm.
there has to be a very high level of doctrinal agreement and unity. And I'm sure that has had something to do with the relatively slow growth within the association over 28 years.
Yeah, that's right.
But I appreciate that you've already spoken to that, Steve, that it's that agreement that we have over the Second London Confession that enables us to work very closely with
mm-hmm.
one another. And so how important it is that we maintain that and make, you know, our unity and our doctrinal fidelity a very high priority and not always look to just grow bigger and bigger and bigger. Some have asked me, only 9
mm-hmm.
churches in this association in all of Southern California. Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
But there's a reason for it, and I think the reasons are good.
We're also one of the, believe it or not, we're one of the bigger associations that exist.
Mm-hmm.
I'm not sure where Georgia and Texas are. They're ones that are close to us in size, and maybe they've surpassed us. I'm not quite sure. But, you know, I always look at myself as a kid and a young guy, and then people remind me that I'm not. I just remember there's a generation of Reformed Baptists that preceded me,
mm-hmm.
you know, basically. And now so many of them are going to be with the Lord and such like that. But I can remember, seriously, when you could count on two hands the number of Reformed Baptist churches there were west of the Mississippi.
Sure. Yeah.
There just weren't any, you know. We didn't have any real mentors that could help us when we became Reformed. We learned by trial and error and listening to tapes and doing the best we could. You know, made a lot of mistakes.
Yeah.
And that's just the truth. And, you know, that's why those early 80s were so difficult. A lot of it, we brought it on ourselves. We didn't know.
Yeah.
Didn't understand.
I hear that theme a lot when I'm listening to some of the older men, the older pastors. You know, mm-hmm. when they speak, they talk often about how this younger generation has, in some ways, a great advantage, you know, in that. Mm-hmm. There's a seminary that's being established, and there are so many resources that are available to us and to them now that just weren't there 30 years ago. So praise the Lord for that. What a blessing. And I hope the younger generation does take advantage of that and not take it for granted, all that we do have.
Mm-hmm. There have been so many things that have been discovered by Dr. Renahan and others. Mm-hmm. That we just didn't know existed. The computer has done this to a great extent, because about all the only works being printed were Presbyterian works. Well, that's what we read. That's all we had. We didn't know anything about Benjamin Cox, Nehemiah Cox, Keach, Kiffin. Just didn't know, you know?
Right.
But now, with the plethora of things being able to be put on the Internet, and men that have been able to study and go to places and study. You know, truthfully, when we became a Reformed Baptist, we didn't have a really great regard for the London Baptist Confession of Faith. We knew it existed, and we saw, okay, here's something that can help us, you know. But to actually subscribe or even have a sense of subscribing to a confession of faith, that was a very foreign concept. We had to learn that, and we learned it over time. So I try to be patient when people don't understand, because we didn't understand.
Right.
People need to be taught.
Well, that's good, Steve. Yeah. That is one of the benefits of coming from a different tradition, or having had to learn things along the way. I think it makes it a little easier to be patient with those mm-hmm. who aren't where you're at now, because you do understand the difficulty of the journey yourself, having experienced it. Steve, how has this association benefited you as a pastor?
Oh, it's been tremendous, you know. It's been a tremendous blessing, because I consider myself, you know, I was very young. I consider myself young when I finally stepped into the role as the main preaching pastor, and yet there were these guys that I could fellowship with and learn from and work with. Like I said, Earl Blackburn, Lawyer Vincent, we were all pretty close. And, you know, the churches, the commendation of one another was great. The counsel that we could get was great. Our people realizing that it's not just 40 of us inside the walls of this building, but look, we can gather together with these other churches, and now, wow, there's 150 of us, and that was pretty exciting to us, you know. and that's how small we were, and that's how the world would consider us so insignificant, and still does. But an opportunity to grow together and learn together and appreciate one another, just, you know, and that accountability has been great over the years, too. You know, it's very helpful that we're not lone rangers out here all by ourselves, but we've got brethren that pray for us and care for us and will help us when they need to. I got desperately ill in the 90s, early in 1990, and probably had to be out of the pulpit for, maybe 3 months. Hmm. And here were men that would come and fill our pulpit for us. And that was encouraging to our people. I think I've only missed one Sunday because of illness since then. Maybe two.
Wow. Yeah.
But that was a really rough go there. But the association really helped, you know. So,
how have you seen the association help to advance Christ's kingdom? Could you speak to that a little bit, Steve? Because you went from four churches to three to four. And I don't know if you have all of this by memory, mm-hmm. but now there are nine. Mm-hmm. So how did that happen? Can you describe that at all? Because that is multiplication there and something to rejoice in. Yeah,
it is. Like I say, the one church that went out of existence, that was it was a very weak church to begin with. But we, in the local association, as in ARBCA, we don't worry about the size of the church per se. Now, there comes a point of ridiculousness, of course. But a church of 20 is a church of Jesus Christ, and so we know that. But they're going to be in a weaker position. You're well aware of our brethren up at Mountain Reformed, who our local association has helped out tremendously. Congregation of about 25 people, precious people and really godly people, but small. And because they're in an isolated mountain community, probably always will be small. Unless the Lord were to do something unusual. And so, you know, it doesn't matter about the size of the church, but the way the churches have grown, it's going to sound a little trite, but it's true, one by one, you know, one by one. We get to meet the pastor. The pastor is interested in the doctrines of grace. There'll be some kind of informal, usually kind of informal mentoring process that will go on in a learning process, and it teaches church and come to some quarterly gatherings, or people see the quarterly gatherings, and it's been organic like that, you know, just one by one. And there have been a number of churches that have been part of SCARB that are no longer. They are no more, you know. And there was a church in Pasadena, very large church by our standards, a couple hundred people, and they are no more. And, you know, it happens. And people get discouraged by that sometimes, but I like to say, you know, look at the New Testament and look at all those churches that the epistles were written to. Where are any of those churches today? At one point, they all went out of existence. You know, none of them have survived. Even Rome didn't. Romans, nope. Not the Church of Rome. You know, if their doctrine lined up with it, then we'd be more inclined to agree. But it doesn't. So, you know, their churches do go out of existence. But the church itself never goes out of existence. So other churches rise up, and sometimes it works out for them to be in the local association. Sometimes it doesn't. Sometimes they find something else or nothing else, you know. But that's about all I could say. We're a little more informal than ARBCA is, and we can be because we know each other. Mm-hmm. But what we try to do is make sure that each church that comes into SCARB has a sister sponsoring church. Mm-hmm. And that sponsoring church is going to help them and mentor them and make sure that their doctrine is correct. We do the same thing in ARBCA, the National Association, but we have a membership committee in the National Association that works with churches. Our local association doesn't have a membership committee. Instead, we work on a more informal basis and pair churches up with other churches. And I think that's really a good way to do it, because we can do it that way because we're small enough and we can know each other well.
Right, right. Well, Steve, I know we have been very blessed to be a part of the Southern California Association. It's only been a short time.
Amen.
But the process of me hanging around and getting to know guys, you know, over time, organically, as you said, and the process of us as a church, you know, coming into the association, being received in and being in it now for a little over a year, it's been a tremendous blessing in all the ways that you have just described.
Yes.
It's been wonderful. And now for us to be applying for membership in ARBCA, we're also very excited about that. And,
amen.
And we are excited about how the National Association, because it is larger, is able to work on church planting, the sending out of missionaries, and the establishment of a seminary. So when I look on ARBCA's website and I see the local missions page, and I think there are five church plants that are listed on there currently, that's very that's very encouraging. And it's exciting to be able to come alongside and to help out and to pray for and to support those works, because five new churches spread across this country, it might seem like a very insignificant number to some, but it's substantial in my mind.
Well, it is for a Reformed Baptist Church to start as a Reformed Baptist Church. Well, I was almost unheard of. I'd have to say it was unheard of in the 80s. I don't know any. There might have been some, but I don't know of any Reformed Baptist churches that were planted as Reformed Baptist churches. It's not rare anymore. There are a number that we could name, and some that are being planted still.
Right.
But you know, and we've had our hand in church planting. Thankfully, we sent Bob Curley to Texas, you know, and helped with Laurie Vincent's church there to plant Emmanuel Reformed Baptist Church. We've had Redeemer Reformed Baptist Church that started in Redlands with my co-pastor, Jeff Massey, who was with me for 14 years here in Ontario. And now he's there, and now they're in San Bernardino. But, you know, that's a tremendous thing. And more church plants are on the way, you know, and being planned up in the Northwest. We have them. Arizona, the Gilbert Church in Arizona, very, very active in church planting. And the Lord's using them greatly. I really believe church planting is probably the way the Lord is going to bless us in this next couple of decades. Instead of churches becoming Reformed, although obviously we still want that to happen too. But that can be a very painful process.
Sure.
Not as painful as it used to be, because now men have other men they can talk to and realize that you do sometimes have to take it slow. You can't just expect people to come along because you came along. You have to lead them along, you know. And people will rebel against the doctrines of grace. It goes against our nature.
Sure.
You know. But patience really pays off. And I've seen churches come to Reform and not lose anybody, you know, or lose maybe just a handful of people. That's wonderful. It's been my privilege to be on the membership committee of ARBCA since 2002, and to be the chairman since 2008. And, you know, it's just a wonderful thing to talk to the churches and talk to the men and make long-lasting friendships that way, and go to the GA and get 100 friends, you know. It's a wonderful thing.
It is.
It's a wonderful thing. Privilege, you know.
Well, Steve, I knew this was going to be a good interview. I've always enjoyed talking with you. You've over the years have been so kind and gracious. You take your time with me, and that's been true for years now. And it's been very appreciated. And so I just knew that in interviewing you that would come through, and I think that it has. But who knows how the Lord will use this little episode that we send out to who knows who and where it goes. I don't know. But I hope that it's an encouragement to some who are listening in and who are thinking through issues of church polity. My prayer is that they would consider what we're talking about here. And
chapter 26 of our London Baptist Confession of Faith. That's the one we really need to get to know well. That's where we talk about our polity. And Joe, I really appreciate you. I want you to know that. You know, from the first time we met, I was impressed and thought that the Lord may do great things, and he has.
Well, thank you, Steve. I appreciate that very much. And to the listener, I would just say thank you for listening into this particular episode. I'm sure you can contact either Steve or myself. It wouldn't be hard to find us if you'd like to, if you have any more questions. But do please check back with us regularly. And until then, I would encourage you all to abide in Christ. God bless.